All right, so we're diving into an inspector calls today. And you've probably already read it, but we're going deeper. Like how Priestley uses each character to make a point, almost like they're all part of this bigger puzzle.
It is really interesting how he doesn't just like create characters, he builds them to show different opinions, different parts of society, especially in 1912 Britain.
Yeah, like how their world is all pink and intimate at the beginning. Like a dollhouse or something. But then you realize, wait a minute, those stage directions are doing way more than just setting the scene.
Exactly. Those directions, they show us how the Burlings think stuck in their little bubble, comfy, not seeing any of the struggles out there, and that makes their downfall even more, well, shocking when you think how clueless they were at
Yeah, it's like
first.
you're putting on a show, right? This perfect family. And then the inspector comes along and yanks the curtain back. Oh, and speaking of characters, what about Eva Smith? She's never even on stage, but her story is like the whole play.
See, that's Priestley being clever. By keeping Eva off stage, she becomes everyone, anyone who's been pushed aside, ignored. She's the voice for the voiceless.
And we only hear about her through the Burlings, and their memories aren't always reliable, are they? It makes you think about how history gets written, whose stories get told.
Really important point. Priestley makes us question what we think is true, especially when it comes from, well, the people in charge. Speaking of which, let's talk about Mr. Burling.
Yeah.
He comes in boasting, right? All about his fancy connections and how he's a public man.
Doesn't stop name dropping, does he? Alderman, future Lord Mayor. He's trying to convince everyone, maybe even himself.
Total social climber, especially since he's what they called nouveau riche back then. Got the money, but wants the respect that comes with, well, old money
And
families.
he wants more than respect, he wants power. Remember that line where he says people need to come down sharply on the working class? Brrr, sends chills down your spine.
Yeah, that line shows you his prejudice, right? Thinks he's earned his spot at the top, and anyone who challenges that is the enemy. And this connects back to 1912, Big gap between the rich and poor, lots of tension.
Okay, so we've got Mr. Burling, the big boss man, but then there's Gerald Croft. He's supposed to be the perfect match for Sheila, but there's something got off.
Definitely tension there. Gerald is old money, part of the established order. Mr. Burling, he's still trying to fit in. So it's not just a personal clash. It's like these two different classes rubbing up against each other.
And the way Mr. Burling sees the engagement is a business deal. Wow. It's like love and marriage are just another way to climb that social ladder.
Right. It's all about appearances for him. Now, Mrs. Burling, she seems all proper and charitable on the surface, but underneath.
Oh, yeah. Total prejudice lurking there. Remember how she flips out when she finds out Eva used the name Mrs. Burling? It's not about Eva's pain, it's about protecting her own image.
She's obsessed with those social lines, those boundaries, and anyone who crosses them is a threat to her whole world.
And she's supposed to be helping people with that women's charity group, but she's actually using it to, enforce those divisions.
Total hypocrisy, right? Claims to be moral, but she shuts Eva down completely. Her worldview is all about judging, controlling, not about empathy.
It's awful how easily she labels Eva as a girl of that sort. Just shows how people use stereotypes to control others, make them less human.
And that's what Priestley wants us to see, how easy it is to ignore someone's suffering when we label them as different.
Yeah, it's like she's built a wall between herself and Eva, refusing to see her as a person.
That wall metaphor, he uses that a lot. It represents all the barriers we put up between us and others based on class, status, anything.
Okay, we've talked a lot about the older Burlings, but Sheila, she's different, right? At first, she seems kind of self-centered, but there's something more there.
I think Sheila shows us that change is possible, especially for the younger generation. She grew up in this world of privilege, but the inspector's visit shakes her up. She starts to see things differently.
Yeah, like when she realizes what she did and says she'll never do it again, there's real regret there, a desire to break free from how she was raised.
She's starting to see through her family's facade. They act respectable, but underneath, it's all hypocrisy and injustice.
She's almost a bridge between the old world and the new, struggling with what she was taught, but also wanting to find her own way.
Exactly. And through her, Priestley explores this idea of growing as a person, even when you're surrounded by inequality.
So we've got all these fascinating characters, each with their own message. But there's one more, the inspector himself.
Ah, yes, Inspector Gould. He comes in and turns their world upside down. He's not just a policeman, he's like a symbol of something bigger.
He's got this way about him, doesn't he? He doesn't judge. He just lays out the facts and lets the Burlings unravel.
He's like a moral detective uncovering the hidden connections between their actions and Eva's tragic end. And the way he arrives right after Mr. Burling's speech about responsibility, pure genius.
Oh, totally. Priestley's timing is perfect. It's like the play itself is a puzzle, and the inspector is the one guiding us through each piece.
Exactly. And that's what we'll keep exploring in the next part of our deep dive. We'll look closer at responsibility, guilt, social justice, and how Priestley uses the inspector to make us question our own assumptions, you know? It's going to get really interesting.
So we left off talking about Inspector Gould, who's clearly not your average policeman. He's got this way of getting under the Burling skin.
He's fascinating, isn't he? Operates on a whole other level, like a walking conscience or something. Doesn't play by the Burling's rules.
And his methods, they're pretty clever. He focuses on one person at a time, right? Slowly ratcheting up the tension, showing how each of them is linked to Eva.
Weaving a web, you could say. Pulling each of them in, making them face their part in this tragedy. He's a master at using their guilt, their denials, against them.
It's like he uses their own words to trap them. Like when he confronts Mr. Burling about being a hard-headed businessman.
That's such a crucial moment. It's all about responsibility, isn't it? Burling thinks he only has to answer to his business, his family. Everyone else comes second.
But the inspector, he turns that around. He says we're all connected. What we do affects others, whether we like it or not. Like, firing Eva wasn't just business for Burling. It was a moral choice with huge consequences.
Exactly. And that ties into Priestley's socialist beliefs, right? He's critiquing the whole capitalist system. Saw it as unfair, exploitative, thought real change could only come if we all took responsibility for each other.
So it's bigger than just individual blame. It's about the system itself,
right,
and how it allows these tragedies to happen. And Priestley shows how that's messed up at every level of society.
Right. Each character is like a piece of that system. Mrs. Burling with her self-righteousness, Sheila acting carelessly. It shows how even small acts of selfishness add up to a huge problem.
And then there's Eric, the youngest. He's a bit of a wild card, isn't he? Uh-huh. Obviously troubled.
Eric represents the younger generation, and his actions show how reckless things were back then. Priestley saw that a lot. Young people without guidance. But Eric's also got a good heart, capable of empathy.
Yeah, his connection with Eva is complicated. He's drawn to her vulnerability, but then he takes advantage. Wants to help, but also acts selfishly.
And his confession, as shocking as it is, shows he's honest, more self-aware than the older Burlings. He owns up to his mistakes.
So even though he messes up, he's also the one most likely to change. Kind of hopeful, right? Maybe the younger generation will learn from the past.
Really good point. Through Eric and Sheila, Priestley shows us there's hope for a better future. He doesn't just condemn, he suggests that redemption's possible.
But it's not easy. The inspector makes it clear that real change means more than saying sorry. It's about changing our values, our priorities.
Remember that powerful speech, "We don't live alone. We are members of one body. We are responsible for each other." That's the core of it.
It's like he's holding up a mirror, forcing us to see how we're all involved in others' suffering. And that message is still important today.
Absolutely. Social responsibility, class inequality, the impact of our choices. Priestley's words resonate today. He's reminding us we can't ignore injustice.
It's like a challenge to be more aware, to care more, to actually do something to make the world fairer. But hold on, before we go too far, let's talk about that ending. The phone call, it changes everything.
That ending is brilliant. Just when the Burlings think they're off the hook, that phone rings. Now, there might be a real inspector. Back to square one.
It's like you can't hide from the truth, no matter how hard you try.
Exactly. And it makes us wonder, was the inspector real or just their guilty conscience? Does it matter? The point is, they had to face what they did.
So much to think about. No easy answers, just a call to action.
That's what makes this play so powerful. It's not just a story, it's a challenge. It pushes us to look at ourselves and the world differently.
We've covered so much. The characters, the themes, the historical context, that crazy ending. But there's one more layer.
In the last part, we'll look at the tools Priestley uses, like the play's structure, the setting, the language. That's how he makes it so compelling.
All right, so we've really gotten to know the characters and the themes and even that crazy ending of An Inspector Calls.
Yeah.
But now, let's get kind of technical. How does Priestley, the playwright, actually use the stage and the words to make this play so powerful? It's more than just the story, right?
It's like he's a craftsman, you know. carefully choosing each element to build his message. Take the setting, for example. The whole thing happens in one room, the Burlings' dining room. That's got to be intentional.
It does feel kind of claustrophobic sometimes, yeah. Like the walls are closing in as the inspector reveals more and more.
Exactly. It traps them, reflects how they can't see beyond their own little world, how they can't escape what they've done. And think about the time period, too, 1912. Priestley could have said it in his own time, but he chose this moment right before everything changed.
Oh, right. Like the world was about to explode, war, social unrest, all that.
Yeah, so it's like their family drama is happening against this backdrop of a much bigger crisis, which is about to hit everyone. And it makes the Burlings seem even more naive, you know? Like they think they're so secure, but the world's about to turn upside down.
Wow, I didn't even think about it like that. And what about the way they talk, the language?
Oh.
It's so different for each character.
Priestley's really good at that. He makes each character's speech fit who they are, their place in society. Like Mr. Burling's all bluster and business talk, right?
Yeah, totally different from Sheila, who's way more thoughtful, questioning things.
Exactly. Burling, he throws around words like lower costs, tighten our belts, all about money and control. But Sheila, she starts to see things more clearly as the play goes on. Her words reflect that, how she's challenging her family's values.
It's like she finds her own voice, right? And what about the inspector? He speaks so differently from everyone else.
Ugh, the inspector. He's very deliberate, impactful, short, sharp sentences to cut through the Burlings' excuses. And he uses these powerful images, moral statements, to really hit home. Like, we don't live alone. We are members of one body. We're responsible for each other. It's like a sermon, almost.
Chills. It sticks with you. And then there's how the play is structured, the three acts. But it's not your typical three acts.
No, Priestley's playing a game with us. The first two acts, it's all building the tension, revealing those secrets, the connection to Eva. Then, bam, third act, the twist with the maybe real inspector.
Keeps you guessing till the very end. And even then, you're left wondering, what does it all mean?
That's the point. He doesn't want to give us easy answers. He wants us to keep thinking about it after we leave the theater. What would I have done? Am I part of the problem?
It makes you uncomfortable, but in a good way. It's like a wake-up call. And Inspector Calls is more than just a play. It's an experience that challenges you to be better.
Exactly. And Priestley does that not just with the story, but with how he tells it. The setting, the language, the structure, all of it works together to make it really hit home.
So we've covered a lot, haven't we? The characters, the themes, the history, even the technical stuff.
And Inspector Calls is a powerful piece of work. It stays with you because it talks about things we're still dealing with today. Responsibility, inequality, how our choices matter.
Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into An Inspector Calls. It's been a real eye-opener. We'll catch you next time for another exploration of ideas that matter.